what are the green attributes that we're even after? One of them is, of course, scale. Can you even reach scale to decarbonize a significant portion of the aviation industry? And another is reduction in carbon intensity. Obviously, there are the SAF, majority of SAF available on the market today is HEFA, and you know, has a sizable reduction in carbon intensity, but lacks the ability to scale at the level we need globally, just because of feedstock. And there are other forms of SAF from biomass, from energy crops that can help us get there. But we need a full technology portfolio, including things like power to liquids and e-fuels and alcohol to jet, electric aviation, hydrogen. I don't think that we can meet our goals by leaving anything off the table.
Welcome to Sustainability in the Air, the world's first podcast dedicated to sustainable aviation. I'm your host, Shashank Nigam, the CEO of Simply Flying. Every Thursday, I have important conversations with top aviation executives, technology entrepreneurs, and policymakers helping aviation take climate action. Conversations that help separate the signal from the noise. Whether you are a frequent flyer or an airline executive, if you care about sustainability or simply love traveling, welcome aboard. My guest today is Jamila Yamani. She is the Director of Climate and Energy at Salesforce. You may wonder, why do I have a company like Salesforce, which is a B2B CRM software product, on this podcast? And that's because large technology businesses have a huge role to play in helping aviation become sustainable. Jamila specifically is looking at creative ways to reduce Scope 3 emissions of Salesforce, which include flights, and working with airlines. One of her key initiatives has been to launch the Sustainable Aviation Challenge by Uplink and the World Economic Forum. Let's hear from Jamila on what she's doing to help aviation become more sustainable. Jamila, it's great to be speaking. You are one of the rare non-airline, non-airport executives we have on this podcast. Tell us about your role at Salesforce and why in the world is Salesforce, a CRM platform, interested in sustainable aviation?
Well, it is an honor to be here. Thank you so much for having me and inviting me today. So at Salesforce, my role kind of spans two major buckets, climate innovation and energy transition. And so that covers a number of different sectors. One of the places we've started with our footprint is in aviation because we have an emissions footprint in aviation. We are also members of the First Movers Coalition on both CDR as well as aviation, which is how our foray into this space really began.
Again, let me zoom out then. If you have such a large portfolio on sustainability, why is sustainability important to Salesforce?
It's a good question, and we get it a lot. I think the initial perspective, especially from ESG, has always been a risk mitigation perspective. How do you mitigate the risks associated with climate and climate change? But it's not only meant to be a risk mitigation. It's not only meant to reduce the bad that we do. It's also about what good can we do? How can we use our platform to not only improve our own footprint, but accelerate the energy transition globally to reach global net zero faster. And it's an opportunity, not just for our business, for businesses across the world in sustainability.
Okay, so a bit of context here. I think very few people know I have a technology background, and my first internship offer from university was from Salesforce.com. At that time, it was still Salesforce.com. Mark Benioff was in town, and why I was so impressed to go for the interview rounds was his vision of beyond just software. Well, he was talking about no software, and that was the big marketing slogan at that time. And since then, Mark Benioff has led from the front around holistic development of the company, around CSR efforts and community-led development. But Salesforce is new, as far as I'm concerned, into sustainability or environmental sustainability. Why are you so well suited to lead this space for the company?
I think perhaps I would say we're not new in the space. We've had a footprint in CSR and environmental sustainability for a while. Our footprint continues to grow. And so me personally, I also have a technical background. I have a doctorate in chemical and environmental engineering, spent time in private equity and venture capital thereafter, and then moved over to Salesforce. So I've seen what the life cycle of technology looks like from very early stage to initial investment to middle market. And at Salesforce, it provides me an opportunity to see how we can leverage the superpowers that we have, the levers that we have to participate in that innovation lifecycle. And I mentioned climate innovation is a perspective that I bring. It can apply to things like energy transition or nature or a number of other sustainability challenges. And in this case, sustainable aviation is the topic of discussion today. But it's an opportunity for us to see how Salesforce can use its levers to advance technology across the board from very early stage to middle market to commercialization. It just depends on what levers we're using and what the goals we're after.
Okay. You mentioned corporate travel as a large part of emissions or, you know, unabatable emissions. How do you tackle that? And what is required to manage corporate business travel emissions from a Salesforce perspective?
So, you know, this program really kicked off for us when we released our climate action plan a few years ago, and we started to understand where all of our emissions come from, especially in aviation. So the things that we learned that we're going to need to do in order to mitigate these emissions is, one, educate ourselves, educate our employees, educate our executives on where are our emissions coming from? How can we manage them? What are things that we can do to help bring that number down before the industry has, you know, moved ahead? So that's, I would say, number one. It's just education and empowerment of our employees. Of course, we have a digital first approach. Salesforce platform also has Slack, a digital headquarters. And so, that has been a big part of our strategy, as well as mode switching. We know that travel will continue to be an important part of not just our business, but global businesses everywhere. And we opt for lower emissions travel where possible, whether that's things like rail in some regions. So those have been some of the ways that we've started. Of course, data is a big part of our approach. You can't do any of this unless you understand where emissions come from, and not just, you know, you have X amount of emissions per year, but what regions, what routes, what airlines are you flying? All these pieces are really helpful information for us to understand where do we begin our mitigation efforts.
So let's make this a bit more concrete or granular. Let's say you have to come meet me in London for a business meeting. What is the data Salesforce is capturing from your travels, and how is this data then used or aggregated to make better decisions?
So originally, and those of your listeners that are on the sustainability team will know, most of our emissions calculations come from DEFRA factors. So broadly, factors that are used to calculate emissions, not specific to any route or airline or seat. But as our emissions inventory becomes more advanced, we're starting to get more granular and get more specific, get more accurate. And what that looks like is talking directly with our suppliers, with our airline partners on what do our emissions look like? What was the emissions of that seat that I flew on to come meet you from Houston to London on this particular aircraft on this particular day? That type of granularity is so necessary for us to be able to make better decisions. And the industry is starting to get there. We can get specific emissions reports from our airline partners for the travel that we have had on that specific airline. Of course, that capability is, every airline does not have that capability yet. I'm sure that will continue to get better and better. But some airlines that are leading the pack can do that. And that helps us understand which routes are particularly emissions intensive. We know that, you know, the long range routes are particularly emissions intensive. And for Salesforce, you know, things that we look at in order to prioritize is, you know, where can we meet our customers? That's a big part of what we do. Where do we see the hubs where we have lots of employees? We can tap into our local resources. Where can we get the biggest bang for our buck, if you will? Another thing that we look at is which routes can be mode switched. Obviously, there is no other way for me to get from Houston to London, but in Europe, there are a lot of rail alternatives that can help reduce our overall emissions footprint.
So it seems like intermodality is something you are looking at. What has been done when it comes to intermodality? Do you encourage Europe-based Salesforce employees to take the train when they can? Do you discourage it by saying, sorry, no flights? How does that actually work?
In the platform that we use, our booking platform, we always inform our employees, empower our employees with data. Which routes that are you flying that have the lowest emissions footprint? And if there is a viable rail alternative, our employees are informed of that. One such example, and I remember a colleague told me this a few years ago when he was traveling for Climate Week from Washington, D.C. to New York. He said that he went online and he was ready to book a flight to go from Washington, D.C. to New York. But he got a pop-up that told him, well, you know, your route is well-suited for rail. It will save X dollars and it will save X tons of emissions. And he told me, I thought for a second, I'm going for Climate Week. This feels like the right time to make a choice like this. And he did. And so I think, you know, our employees want to make the right decision, but it's up to us to empower them with the right data to make that decision.
May I ask what system he was using that showed him the Acela, I'm guessing in this case?
Yeah, it's Concur. We use Concur.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so we continue to work with all of our travel providers on how can we continue to improve systems internally.
Would he still have been able to take this train had it been more expensive than the flight, which often tends to be the case, let's say, in Europe or in Japan?
Yes. So that's a good question. Balancing cost and emissions is obviously top of mind for us. In most cases, they trend in the same direction. Cost savings equals dollar savings. Of course, not always. I know rail can be expensive here, but yes, that option exists for our employees for sure.
Okay. So you are saying that Salesforce would encourage employees to spend more in order to reduce scope 3 emissions. Is that right?
There is a cap, obviously, on what right. that additional cost could be. But I guess what I would like to communicate is it's not only dollars. Dollars and emissions are both considerations. And of course, our employees' time and convenience. They're all considerations that have to go into making the right decision for our particular employee in that particular situation.
This is very encouraging, by the way, that there's such flexibility and leeway and it's not just black and white here. I have to ask at this point, why are scope 3 emissions so important to Salesforce? Because a lot of companies are very happy just talking about scope 1 and, you know, I'm net zero in 2030. I'm net zero today. I'm using green coding. I've heard that term as well. And, you know, we are net zero today. Why are scope 3 so important? Isn't that a difficult conversation to have internally?
Yes. But the reality is that our scope 1 and 2 footprint is dwarfed by our scope 3 footprint. And I would say that's true for all tech companies and most companies globally. Most of our emissions sit in our scope 3. And the place where we can have the biggest impact outside the four walls of Salesforce is on scope 3 emissions. Aviation is one example where it shows up because that's our partner is immediately the one that has the scope 1 emission. So an airline partner takes that scope 1 emission, and that's why we see the scope 3 emission. So it's not so buried in the supply chain. In many other cases, our scope 3 emissions are deeply buried in the supply chain, and we're not touching the actual emissions that, you know, are somewhere much further. But it's a good starting point for us to learn how, where we sit in the value chain, which is close to the end of the value chain, is the end user, to have an impact up through the value chain, we can start to see that in aviation and as well as other sectors.
Okay. This is, again, once again, very encouraging. Something else while researching for this interview, my team found out was that executive compensation at Salesforce is tied to achieving climate goals. And that includes reduction in air travel.
Correct.
Did you push this through? Was it a hard one? What impact has this had?
Our ESG team pushed it through, and so kudos to them. One, we have some goals tied to sustainability, including supplier sustainability, as well as air travel. One of the highlights for us on the team that we are is it gives us an opportunity to elevate this conversation to our executives in a very material way. And at the, you know, of course, at the top level, it creates accountability at, you know, the very highest levels of the company for sustainability goals. But more than that, it's an opportunity to educate and empower. I said right at the top that how do you mitigate corporate emissions? You have to educate and empower your employees to do that. And this executive compensation metric allows us an opportunity to educate and empower our executives and all of our employees on business travel emissions.
Okay. Have you seen change in executive behavior since this was done?
We are still in a learning phase. I'm totally transparent. We are figuring it out. I think what's important is what types of insights are helpful for our executives. I mean, they're balancing so many different considerations at the same time, of which sustainability is one of them. You know, we talked about the balancing cost and emissions, but there is more than that, you know, growth of our business and our customers and, you know, other competing priorities within the business. So there's a lot of considerations, and we are learning what are the most important things to elevate to our executives so they can make the right choices.
Right. Okay. It seems to be definitely going in the right direction here.
Absolutely.
Now, when you and I spoke, you were really excited about being part of the Sustainable Aviation Challenge, which is launched by Uplink in partnership with World Economic Forum. You're a part of it. What is the goal of that, and where has that process reached till date?
Absolutely. So our first motivation to participate in this challenge came from our First Movers Coalition commitment. We made this commitment to buy sustainable aviation fuel certificates, but where do we get them? You know, especially us, not being an airline, not being an OEM, we don't necessarily have visibility directly into that market. And so the Uplink Challenge was a chance for us to learn as well as to elevate the conversation on a global level, leveraging all of the resources of the World Economic Forum. And so the goal of this challenge was to identify, source, and highlight those technologies that can help us meet our sustainable aviation goals, not just for Salesforce, not just for the First Movers Coalition, but globally. Today, we are planning to announce the final cohort in a couple of weeks at Davos. And our goal with that cohort is to really move the needle on aviation. And, you know, one of the things that I think about when I think about innovation is we can think about it on a very company level. We can think about it from a financing perspective. But one of the perspectives that I have is decarbonizing aviation in the United States or in Europe is somewhat a foregone conclusion. Let's assume that we're going to do it. Let's assume that we're on the right track. We have all the right players. We have folks like you working hard on this challenge. We're going to make it happen by 2050. How are we going to decarbonize aviation globally? That's not a foregone conclusion that flights leaving Nairobi, that flights leaving Mumbai are all going to be on sustainable aviation fuel or power liquids or electric planes. That's not a foregone conclusion. And so how can our work make sure that we're driving towards that goal of global decarbonization, making sure we don't leave anybody behind? And so one of the perspectives that we're hoping to take on in the next few months is how do we establish those regional hubs at different places around the world? Yes, in developed countries, within the United States, within Europe, but also in those parts of the region and those parts of the world that have the resources to decarbonize the aviation value chain, but need a little bit of push, need some accelerant. I don't know what those regions are yet. I'm all ears if you have ideas. I know you are deep in this space, but that's, you know, really the perspective that we're bringing when we think about the innovators that we're getting out of the aviation challenge.
Well, this is very fascinating, and this hits close to home because in my new book, we talk about the fact that 90% of global SAF supply today is in California.
Yep.
Yet, a large majority of the growth that is coming in aviation is not in the US, definitely not in California, or Europe for that matter. And global equity is something that the airline industry as a whole needs to address and look at right now, not in 2040, not in 2045. And you're absolutely right. If you just look at the order numbers that are coming in for existing technology airplanes being built by Boeing and Airbus primarily, you will see a 500 plane order from Turkish Airlines, another 1,000 new planes in India that will enter into the market. You've got the Middle East and the Gulf countries that are ordering a lot of aircraft. And there is no SAF in many regions. In fact, in the entire continent of South America, there is not a single SAF plant. How do you deal with that? Right? That is a huge thing. Even Africa has SAF. South America does not. So I'm truly inspired to see the vision, and I would love to see what comes off this. Now, what is the role Salesforce is playing in this challenge? What are the specific things you're doing?
So, you know, the technical term is we're a sponsor of the challenge, but the perspective that I bring is our airline peers that have a big footprint in the market have to make have a lot of things that they have to balance when they make decisions on innovation, because it's a huge risk, right? I can't double down on extremely risky SAF that's tied to my core business. Of course, Salesforce's footprint in this sector is much, much smaller, but I think we are in a position to tolerate a whole lot more risk because it's not tied to our core business. And for that reason, when we're talking about early technologies that need a push, that need some dollars, perhaps in the form of SAF certificate offtake or other forms, we are in a position to make that risk. And so I think that it can't work on our own. We can't do it on our own. We need our industry partners to help us identify what are the best opportunities, what are the ones that are most promising for their regions, but also globally. And you know, leverage the position where we are at the end of the value chain, perhaps small dollars, but you know, we have an opportunity to take on that risk, and we're willing. And so we're keen to work with airline partners, OEMs, airports to help push along the industry in a direction that makes sense for everyone.
Very fascinating. You mentioned SAF certificates and SAF offtakes a few times. What are you doing in that regard? And what are some of the challenges and risks when it comes to SAF offtakes?
So as I mentioned earlier, Salesforce does have a commitment to the First Movers Coalition to buy SAF, totaling 5% of our overall business travel emissions. Of course, that number is much, much smaller than, you know, other FMC members like United or Boeing. But, you know, that's the role that I think we play, is that very high risk, high reward type of role. One of the first ways that we're starting to figure out how we're going to deploy this was this Uplink Sustainable Aviation Challenge, starting to get informed on what's out there, what is the industry seeing, what are some of the most promising technologies. We're also members of SABA, the Sustainable Aviation Buyers Alliance, in order to write some of those long-term offtakes. Total transparency. One of the challenges that we face when we think about long-term offtake agreements is there is not clear guidance on how companies at the end of the value chain, business travel buyers, will account for SAF certificates in their emissions inventory. And so without that clear visibility, it's challenging for us to write these offtakes right now at this moment. Not to say that we won't or that we aren't, but it's definitely a consideration. I know that in other markets, especially for compensation-based market mechanisms, there are restrictions on what needs to be true about that particular market mechanism in order for it to apply on your emissions inventory. Are we going to see something similar in SAF? Probably. What is it going to be? I don't know yet. So we are continuing to stay tapped into that market. We want to stay close to the aviation industry so that we can continue to learn what is the best role for us to play. And the initial way that we're doing that is through the Sustainable Aviation Challenge.
Okay. I love the overarching view, and I agree these are challenges because it's early days, right? The field is constantly evolving. I was encouraged to see a recent announcement, though. This was when Infinium, which is an e-fuels producer, SAF producer, received $75 million in equity. I'll mention the different parties here, from Breakthrough Energy, which is a fund or a group that's investing. And this was with the backing that American Airlines will buy the fuel that Infinium makes, but it's being paid for by Citibank. Now, this is very interesting. It's not even a tripatriate. I don't know what you call it, quadratiate kind of a deal. It sounds very complex, but there's a clear role for the corporate here, which is Citibank.
Does Salesforce get into similar deals? And is this something that you're looking to do down the road?
100%. We have made some initial purchases with United Airlines and JetBlue a couple of years ago. Those were our first SAF purchases. So we started to understand, how do you write these contracts? How do you account for things like this? And so as our program continues to evolve, I fully hope that we will be able to participate in a deal very similar to that, perhaps as the off-taker in that case of SAF certificates of the scope 3 attributes that perhaps like in that model American Airlines would be buying.
Right. It's very interesting. Now, given that a lot of this work is really long term, it's not that these airlines will be putting SAF on their flights tomorrow. Even if you pay for it, there isn't enough SAF to go around. What are the risks of greenwashing versus, you know, real work being done? You've alluded to this earlier that, you know, it's hard. It's how the accountability may or may not be there. So how do you talk about this without being accused of greenwashing?
You know, all of these early SAF purchases that we did, our participation in FMC and SAVA, have really educated me on what are the green attributes that we're even after. One of them is, of course, scale. Can you even reach scale to decarbonize a significant portion of the aviation industry? And another is reduction in carbon intensity. Obviously, there are majority of SAF available on the market today is HEFA, and, you know, has a sizable reduction in carbon intensity, but lacks the ability to scale at the level we need globally, just because of feedstock. And there are other forms of SAF from biomass, from energy crops that can help us get there. But we need a full technology portfolio, including things like power to liquids and e-fuels and alcohol to jet, electric aviation, hydrogen. I don't think that we can meet our goals by leaving anything off the table. You asked this question on how do you balance greenwashing and these really making sure that you're making the impact that you need. Particularly when it comes to SAF from biological resources, it's so important to consider like sustainable sourcing of biomass. And we see this not just in aviation, but in other sectors as well. There are huge implications, land implications for local communities when you start harvesting energy crops for things like sustainable aviation. But making sure you're doing that in the most defensible way with a clear view on the entire life cycle of the feedstock of the final product, that helps to really solidify that the green attributes you're after aren't just greenwashed.
Right. I'm glad to hear that. And I know it won't be a straightforward way forward, but I'm sure, you know, we'll all be learning from one another.
Absolutely.
Looking at industry peers, who do you look up to and why?
You know, when I saw this question, I started thinking through, you know, who are all the folks in this market that are making big moves? I won't name anyone, but I will share two kind of big buckets that really elevate to me folks that are leading the industry. One are big companies with big resources. We know who they are. They are using their buying power today to move the market, despite some of these uncertainties that we have around accounting, around what it's going to look like in the future. But it doesn't stop there. They also share their learnings openly and generously with the rest of the industry. And I think that is so powerful and so helpful. And I'm excited to for Salesforce to join that group. And as we continue to grow our footprint in sustainable aviation, to share our learnings, because I think the perspective that we're bringing is slightly unique and slightly different, especially when we consider equity in sustainable aviation, which is not always something that we think about as a top line message. And so that's kind of the first group. The second are those that are much, much smaller, you know, sustainability team N of one, but they manage to do a lot with a little. And teach their peers. So our sustainability team fortunately has bigger than an N of one, but I think those particular companies help identify how even small organizations can have an impact in the overall industry.
I wish you had named them, but I think, you know, I know who you're talking about. What about airlines? Which airlines do you think are doing a good job of working with corporates and partnering?
I think there are a couple of different airlines in the industry that have really doubled down on innovation. Qantas has a huge fund that they've put forward to advance sustainable aviation, especially in their region. Australia's challenges are unique because of it's an island nation. It lacks a lot of, it has some natural resources, lacks other natural resources. United also has a fund in order to advance sustainable aviation. And we've seen just recently, I think Virgin had a 100% SAF flight. So all, you know, this is just to name a few that are kind of risen to the top, but I'd say there are so many that are continuing to make strides in this space and like to bring along corporate buyers like Salesforce. And we want to be a part of that conversation. We want to understand the role that we play, but really look to our industry partners to identify what is a good role for us, because they're the experts in the space.
Right, right. That's really exciting. Finally, what gives you the most hope when you look at the future of sustainable aviation?
You know, air travel is a privilege. It's a privilege today. And I hope that you mentioned earlier that the parts of the world that are going to see the most growth in aviation are those that are not necessarily developed today. And I think we're going to see a lot of first-time flyers join the global flying community in the next 10, 20, and 30 years. That's exciting. That's real globalization. Aviation has the ability to connect all of these different regions around the world. What gives me hope is that it's not only going to be a developed, a Western world-centric conversation. It might be today, but it won't be for long. It's really going to be about the global community, especially as we see all of our developing, all of the developing countries and those emerging markets join this community in a much more earnest way.
Right. That's definitely, it's something I have strong feelings about, and it's something that we at Simply Flying are working towards as well. So that totally, totally resonates. You know, it's really groundbreaking work that you're leading at Salesforce, and it's impressive. And I'm looking forward to some of the results that come through this in the next few months and years. The final part of this interview is what's called a rapid fire round, in which I ask you some questions and people get to know you a bit more personally. And we'll start with a simple one. What's your favorite airline?
When I used to live in LA, I'm from LA originally, Singapore Airlines, way at the top of that list. They are awesome. I live in Houston now. We just don't get to take Singapore that often. So Qatar is what we fly often. And I love Qatar.
Yeah, they have really good food as well.
Their food is fantastic.
Absolutely. Your favorite city?
In the United States, Boston. Globally, Barcelona.
Okay, both with B. What's your favorite book?
I'm ashamed to admit I am not actually a huge reader. I do a lot of reading for work. But the one book that my husband put me on is called Counting Down. He's an anesthesiologist. And it's a book that talks a little bit about what that process is like, what the experience is like. And I think I particularly enjoyed it because it gave me a window into his world, which is so vastly different from my world.
Wow. That is different indeed. I will Google that book. I was not familiar, but I will check it out. Thank you. For sharing. What about your favorite movie?
I love Sing. I have three small kids. We watch it a lot. A lot, a lot. Sing 1 and 2.
Thank you. It had fallen off my radar. I have two little girls.
Yes.
That's what we're going to watch.
So good. So good.
that's good. What is something you want to learn?
I speak a couple of languages, but...
Which ones?
To learn. I speak Gujarati. I speak Spanish. I speak English. I can get by in Urdu. I want to learn another language, different from perhaps my ethnic languages or my parents' native languages. I don't yet know how I'm going to do that. I'm hoping that when my kids get to the age that they're learning a language, I can pick it up with them. So,
or perhaps there's Duolingo.
I've tried Duolingo, but I'm not good at committing. I'm going to get back into it.
All right. There's also immersion. I had Emilia De Luca on the show from Delta, and she's lived in Amsterdam. She's lived in Mexico, and she says, you know, that's the best way to pick up languages, immersion. Just to immerse yourself.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Perhaps
yeah,
when
exactly.
I'm empty nester.
Jamila, what do you do in your free time?
I do a lot of cooking. I also play a lot of board games, something that my kids love to do. And of course, we travel a lot.
Any favorite board game?
We're starting to get into sequence. My kids are just getting to the age where they're fun to play with. So sequence is our number one game right now.
Okay, good to know. What's the best advice you have received?
I love this question. We are all selling something. I'm selling something. You're selling something. Even my anesthesiologist husband is selling something. And the best advice that I've ever gotten is believe in what you're selling. Because if you don't believe in it, the person you're selling it to definitely isn't going to believe in it. And more than that, if you don't believe in what you're selling the wrong thing. Look for something else. Use your skills for the thing that you do believe in. We all have a short time here to make an impact. So find what it is that, you know, turns on the light for you.
Very interesting that you mentioned this, because just yesterday, one of my mentors, whose name is David Meerman Scott, he lives in Boston. He wrote an article in which he said that people are seeking inspiration from people who believe in themselves. So if you step on the stage like he does, he's a speaker, he needs to believe in himself. That's all that's needed. People are looking for others who believe in themselves. And this totally hits home. If you were on a long-haul flight, 18 hours, LA to Singapore, who would you choose as your seatmate?
Oh.
Living or dead?
You know, I'm never good at these. My world is so small. I'd probably pick Jane Goodall. She's been so attached to a lot of the work that we do, and I've heard her speak. You know, she has a close relationship with Salesforce, but I've never had the chance to sit down and talk to her. So I would love to learn about her, the evolution of her career, what she's seen and what she sees as the challenges that we'll face in the next 50 years.
Wow. Okay. May that come true.
If not, I'll take my husband, because we don't actually get a lot of time. If not, he can sit next to me for 18 hours.
There you go. Final question. If we are speaking 1 year from now and we are popping champagne or celebrating, what are we celebrating?
Oh, that's a great question. On aviation specifically, I would love to see the first commercial electric plane. I think it's not far away. I think I don't need to electrify LA to London, but there are a lot of regional flights that we can successfully do, and it's not far away. We know how to electrify planes. We're getting closer. And so maybe a year is too short of a timeline, but you know, I think we're getting closer each day. And the innovation on batteries is happening so fast, because there are implications for utility scale renewables. There's implications for passenger transport. And so can we cascade those to be much faster and see that? Maybe. I don't know. Maybe a year is short. Maybe in 5 years, but still.
No, I think about a year for the first commercial electric flight. I know SAS Scandinavian has committed to doing it in 2028 with Heart Aerospace, but I think we'll see it even before that. So I think it's coming sooner than later. Jamila, this has been really inspiring. Thank you for all the fantastic work you're doing at Salesforce, your work with First Movers Coalition. I'm really looking forward to some of the big results and goals that you achieve in the next few months and years. Thank you.
You and me both. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Sustainability in the Air. Aviation is one of the hardest to decarbonize industries. Yet, there are multiple paths to get to net zero. Awareness is key to a green future. So please give us your support to help our sustainable aviation insights reach a wider audience. You can do this by sharing this episode on your network, on LinkedIn, Twitter, or even WhatsApp. Or perhaps you might consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to this episode. You can start a conversation with us by writing to us at podcast@simplifying, that's simply with an i.com. And for more content on sustainable aviation, please visit our website green.simplifying.com and join the movement. Sustainability in the Air is an original podcast by Simplifying. The show is produced by Juraj Toth in Slovakia. Dirk Singer is our Director of Sustainability, who leads research for each interviewee out of Greenwich, UK. Shubhadeep Pau is our supervising editor based out of Mumbai and Singapore. The articles are written by Ayushi Badola in Dehradun in India and Meera Hull in Montreal, Quebec. Creative design is led by Ligia Esteve in Montreal. Baiba Dreamen is the project director for the show based out of Valencia, Spain. Special thanks to Wendy Sim in Singapore. And I'm Shashank Nigam, the CEO of Simplifying and your host. Please feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn.